This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. There's a growing protest movement across the country. Whether it is a sit-in for Trayvon Martin or a voter ID protest in Richmond, Virginia, or rallies for gun control in Connecticut, you're going to find that folks across the country are becoming fed up and feeling let down by their governments. Filmmakers Annabelle Park and Eric Bleiler have decided to travel around the country and find out what's at the heart of this intense political division. During their travels, they quickly became fascinated with North Carolina's political struggles, especially the energy surrounding Moral Mondays. They soon decided to work on a feature film focusing on our state. Annabelle Park is a producer and director for the web series and upcoming feature film Story of America, A Nation Divided. Annabelle, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having us.
What first got you interested in this whole question of, was it the movements themselves, the question of polarization? What was it?
Well, I think two things. Like, one is deeply personal, which is that I grew up in South Korea. I was born in 68, and it was pretty much still a kind of post-war economy. And it was a military dictatorship, during my childhood there. And we moved when I was about 10 years old to Texas. And I think that, Civil War took place, only 60 years ago in Korea. And I think that was always something that was on my mind because I grew up thinking there could be another war at any moment. And when I got to America, one of the things that happened was, my parents decided that they were going to pursue their American dream, and they started bought a taco stand in downtown Houston, where most of their customers were Mexican laborers. And then they bought a diner next to a truck stop, which actually was a great experience because I grew up working at this diner and talking to truck drivers and walking around the restaurant asking people wanted refills on their coffee. And I think that those experiences, I think, led me to the place where I feel like, our identities are, constantly shifting in a way, But, one of the things that concerned me was that the way things are going in our country with the state of not only political division, but a kind of dehumanization that's occurring, that it, in a way, it feels like it could be a path to a kind of war, not necessarily the kind of violent war that we saw in Korea or in American history, but the kind of war in which people really are completely seeing each other as enemies.
And totally other, apparently, as you say, the dehumanization aspect of it. Has the discourse changed much from the time you were pouring coffee and obviously listening to people talk politics and have various views, perhaps sharing the same counter and speaking, if not heatedly, but still perhaps civilly to each other? Was that the case then? And I don't know exactly how long ago that was. And has it changed much since?
Well, I think that it feels like the stakes are higher. I think that's what's changed. And I think it has something to do with our media feeding it. And so that, I wouldn't be surprised, for instance, ESPN decided to take up a regular news division because so much of our political events are covered like it's a sporting event. And that it feels like right now, maybe we went from the days when, people really enjoyed baseball and the kind of fairness of baseball to a kind of ultimate fighting situation. So in some ways, you still have a kind of competitive sport, but it's become more brutal.
Tell us about the journey of this project, because I think it began sort of as one thing, but then there was something about North Carolina that caused you to change focus. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I think what happened was, Eric and I are students of history, and we wanted to kind of do a road trip across the country to understand our current politics, but also do a kind of tour of our history. So we wanted to go to places like Selma, and where we could learn about the voting rights struggle and the civil rights movement, but also to Detroit to learn about the Great Migration and white flight. And, just we wanted to kind of do that kind of road trip. But what we saw in North Carolina, and as the nation is now understanding, this is kind of the front line right now of a partisan ideological battle. And that people probably across the country are familiar with it, but it is taking a very dramatic, extreme form here. And I think that wouldn't have been sufficient for us to really stay in North Carolina, but because we saw this movement that was being led by Reverend Barber, but that we thought was rare, wasn't just a kind of protest movement. It went beyond protesting to people trying to really fuse together a new identity.
Well, let's listen to a clip of Reverend William Barber, the head of the state chapter of the NAACP, who was among the lead organizers of the Moral Monday protests.
In a state that has 1.6 million poor people, 600,000 children, thousands more who are not working or that do not make a living wage, and upwards of 25% of North Carolinians that don't have health insurance. In the face of this, the legislature denies funds through the Affordable Care Act, Medicaid, to 500,000 poor North Carolinians, and then after denying, seek to privatize the delivery of services so that fat cats can make more money off the misery of the poor.
So there's the Reverend William Barber at a Moral Monday protest, and a clip from Story of America, A Nation Divided. Annabelle Park is one of the producers of that film and my guest this hour. But you said, now there's a kind of a statement that we would expect in a political discussion like this, where there is this polarity. But you say there was something different about it, something more active and a kind of movement rather than just rhetoric. What's different about it?
Well, maybe not necessarily reflected in that clip, but I think, you know, when Reverend Barber makes references to this fusion movement and also the third reconstruction, he considers this time period the third attempt at reconstructing the South. I think he genuinely is interested in creating a new civic identity in which people do feel like there's an affinity and a kind of new identity that is very inclusive. You know, I think that is, and in the end, what Reconstruction should have been, the original Reconstruction, is less about who's elected, more about people actually feeling like we're in this together. And I think that was never quite achieved. And I think we're seeing the effect of that now is that, you know, there is a kind of dividedness that goes beyond politics to something more psychological, emotional, where people fe like, you know, there are people who are simply alien from them.
Do you sense, as you talk to the people at the Moral Monday movement and then you move across the country, well, let's stay here in North Carolina. Do you get a sense that people are feeling that? That may be his intention. Are they seeing themselves as something different, a new kind of identity coming out of this?
Out of the Moral Mondays movement?
Yeah.
Absolutely, I do. Yeah. I mean, what I would love to see happen is for people, you know, who are not part of the movement to watch our videos and kind of actually get to know the people in the movement beyond the headlines and see that, you know, these are people who I think really are well-intentioned. And they're going through a kind of transformation. Tim Tyson, the historian at Duke, calls it a kind of baptism when people go through this arrest. It really transforms it and bonds them to other people who are part of the movement. And it's incredibly powerful to witness this, right? And I think, you know, what we would love to see is for that kind of feeling of connectedness to be much broader so that it isn't sort of energy hurled at the Republican Party right now, the state, but where it really feels like an invitation for us to say, okay, let's talk about what is meant by the New South. Even Governor McCrory used this phrase, the New South, in his inauguration speech, right? What does that mean, the New South? What does it mean for our policies and our daily lives? But I think it has to be something that really gets to how we look at each other, how we talk to each other. And ultimately, that's what Eric and I are really interested in, is not so much like the actual outcome of all the political fights, but whether or not we can see each other as a fellow citizen, fellow American, and whether or not we are interested in talking to each other. Because I don't think we can have a functioning democracy if we're not talking to each other. And that's the state of things right now.
Thanks for the plug. do you see any room in this movement? But this movement is certainly oppositional. It takes direct aim at the policies of this legislature and the effect that they assume are going to, the effects that they expect to happen and fall out of this. Where's the room then for Republicans and for people who think this is just fine, this is the moment we've all been waiting for people on that side of the fence? Where do they enter this dialogue? They don't want to be baptized. They're pretty happy with the religion they got.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that even with some of the lawmakers we've talked to, and ultimately, you know, Eric and I are both we're documentarians, but we are trying to advance dialogue. And we would like to use videos and screenings of our public screenings as occasions for bringing people together. But even Representative Blaus, who represents Guilford, he's been voting along partisan lines for, you know, these policies. When I spoke to him on Monday, you know, he seemed wounded that people are villainizing him and the Republican Party. And, you know, I asked, well, you know, are you interested in talking to the protesters? You know, and he said he would, especially the ones in his district. I think that many of them actually feel hurt. And that's what I get from many of the Republican lawmakers. You know, they're not immune. They're not so thick-skinned that they can say, I'm indifferent to the protests. I think at some point they're going to want to sit down with people. You know, and so it's, you know, I would like to see if we could encourage that kind of dialogue after the session ends.
Well, it seems to me that it happens on two fronts, at least the observation that maybe conversation is in order. One, a kind of wounding, you know, a sense that I've just been called a name and I didn't think I deserved it. The other is a sense that we're all victims of the system. And no one less than Senator Rucho himself, who is Senate Chairman of the Finance Commission and vilified by the left for a tax reform policy that was highly regressive and lower taxes on wealthier residents, felt the sting and had to actually resign temporarily because moneyed interest had wrecked his deal. He wanted a broad-based sales tax on all services. That was the thing that was going to deliver this and reform the system. And when the private interest got their noses under the tent, the whole thing was wrecked. And here's what he said to you.
I know that at one of the hearings, you looked around and asked who was a lobbyist here.
Yes, I did. Okay. I mean, it's a great question because it was designed to make a point, and that is that the businesses, the groups have all hired lobbyists to defend the special tax preferences that they got, mm-hmm. whether they be realtors, whether they be hospitals. Hospitals pay absolutely no taxes except for the North Carolina withholding. They pay no property tax, no franchise tax, no income tax to the state, nothing. And yet they say, well, we still want to have a special tax preference on mm-hmm. sales tax. Okay. Well, if you're in a sales tax consumption economy, everybody has to pay their share. The point I was making is the audience that stood up and raised their hand were all lobbyists representing some special group who is trying to defend their special tax preference. And what that means is the ones that don't have lobbyists, you know, the individual taxpayers, are paying higher taxes because of those special preferences. And we need to find a way to reverse it.
What do you take away from that conversation that you had with Senator Rucho?
Well, I feel that first of all, many of the Republican lawmakers who are leading, you know, this dramatic shift in the kind of policies here, I feel they are well intentioned. They have a different vision from the people at More Mondays, and perhaps, you know, maybe even the majority of people in North Carolina. But they really do believe this, and they feel they have to do everything they can to advance this, and they believe that everyone will in the end benefit. And the second thing is that I think that many of the lawmakers can agree the process needs to change. I think most people would say there are too many lobbyists influencing the process. And even the other part of the process is like what happened with the abortion bill that got connected to the Sharia law bill and then motorcycle safety bill. That kind of cramming in and combining of things to push legislation through that really doesn't play well with the public. A lot of the lawmakers would say, you know what, we shouldn't be doing that. We know that we have been doing it historically, but that's not a good process. It's definitely not good for public engagement. And so I think there are places in the process where people can come to some agreement about cleaning it up, making it more transparent and fairer.
But I wonder mm-hmm. about some of the disconnects. So, yes, mm-hmm. they walk away saying, okay, we just pulled one over their eyes. We probably shouldn't have done that. But, heck, they did it to us. So here we are. We're in power. And that's okay. Politics as usual. It's one way of coming to a kind of repentance about what you're doing. But let's take Senator Rucho for example. As you mm-hmm. say, his heart's in the right place. He just has a different vision about how to make things better. That broad-based tax plan would have been one of them. He's upset by the impact of moneyed interest. Right. He also is a big supporter of fracking and said publicly, once the fracking bill passed, this tells businesses, he said, this tells big businesses that North Carolina is open for business. And in that case, the representatives of Halliburton met with the chair of the Mining Commission and overturned a commission decision to expose the contents of fracking solution. So there's a big interest, a big moneyed interest. Does he not, in this case, there's clearly a moneyed interest that's harming the will of the state. The commission said yes, and the commission chairman said no. Is it not connected in the minds of, and Republicans and Democrats who can do this, he's in power now, so I'm going to use him as an example. They're just not connecting the dots and seeing that this is all part of one big puzzle.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a great example of where I think there are definitely disconnects between principles and values and kind of the practice of lawmaking, you know. But there are many examples like that where I see these disconnects, and I think it's because I mean, you know that phrase, the fog of war. And I think there's a version of that in politics where it's like there's a fog of electoral war, you know, or policy war. And they are just doing everything they can. They lose clarity and orientation because they're doing everything they can to win. And ultimately, I think that is at the root of a lot of the problems we're having here in North Carolina, but across the country, is people are focused on winning. And I think they lose sight of what it is we're fighting for, you know, just like we do in war. So we don't know exactly why we're in Iraq anymore. We're not in Iraq, but in Afghanistan anymore. But, you know, we just lose sight of what we're fighting for. And I think that that happens all the time where there's a you just get so focused on rooting for your team. I think you start to get very selective in your perceptions, you know, and we create this reality that is disconnected from others. Yeah.
So obviously, North Carolina proves a very interesting place for a project like this. But you have been other places. Are there similar movements? And do you see connections between what's happening here and other parts of the state, other parts of the country?
Well, I would. It's yes and no. I mean, there are other kind of protest movements across the country. I think what is unusual here. Is that the story that's coming out, and you know we're all interested in stories. The stories have enormous impact on politics, but in how we understand who we are, the meanings that we create. And I think the story that Reverend Barber is narrating is a really powerful one that could transform, I think, how people understand their place in our country. You know, that this is really about kind of creating that sort of fusion, that sort of inclusive identity. And I'm not seeing that kind of narrative really anywhere else.
Well, it's interesting, yeah. The cross-generational aspect of it. I'm going to be part of a clip here from a woman who is speaking, a 92-year-old woman, I believe, or 91, at a Moral Monday.
Here I am.
Yes, you are.
At 92 years old.
Yes.
Doing the same battling.
Yes.
I have registered over 4,000 citizens in the state. And at it again, alongside Republicans' efforts to eliminate and cut early voting.
All right, so there we have a woman who went through this campaign when Jim Crow was the law of the land here. Now she feels she's at it again, talking to a lot of young people and cross-generational. How important is that? I got about 20 seconds left, this cross-generational aspect of these protests.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it creates continuity. You know, it creates not only moral continuity in Reverend Barber's understanding of things, but a historic continuity that helps us understand how we got here. And I think how we can go forward. I mean, but, you know, the thing that I really want to emphasize is that, you know, I think there are dynamics left over from the Civil War that is at play here. And until we start really talking about those dynamics and the wounds that people suffered on all sides, that no one has a monopoly on the pain of war, I don't think we're going to make enough progress. I think we really need to open up kind of in a way that will heal everyone and is truly inclusive.
Annabelle, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Annabelle Park is a director and producer for the web series and upcoming feature film Story of America, A Nation Divided. You can find out more at storyofamerica.org or go to our website, stateofthings.org. MotorCo is hosting a screening of some of the film's footage filmed at a town hall. That's going to be August 8th at 7 o'clock. There's more to come. Stay tuned.